The following episode depicts gun violence and murder. Listener discretion is advised. At 11:43 p.m. on Thursday, March 15th, 2001, Worcester Police received a 911 emergency call from a resident living on Dewey Street in the city's main south neighborhood. Minutes later, police received a second call, this time from Worcester Police Sergeant Ronald LaPointe. Sergeant LaPointe was working at a detail at the former 371 Club at the corner of Park Avenue and Parker Street. The club is now home to Rumors Nightclub and Smokey Joe's Cigar Lounge. Someone nearby told LaPointe of hearing gunshots around the corner on Dewey Street. LaPointe quickly ran to the area where the witness said they had heard the gunshots. He was the first on the scene and one of the first people to see William Vega Jr. and Elizabeth Matos laying dead on top of one another in the street. William, 19 years old, and Elizabeth, just 16, were shot from behind while walking up Dewey Street between Parker and Pemberton Streets. William was shot 3 times with a revolver, dying from a bullet wound in his back. Elizabeth was shot 2 times, with the fatal shot in the back of her head.
Unsolved Worcester is brought to you by the following sponsors. The016.com is a proud supporter of Unsolved Worcester. From all the latest local news to your favorite restaurant's latest specials, The 016 is the one place to find everything you need to work, live, and play in Worcester. Check out the016.com today. Unsolved Worcester's aerial imagery is brought to you exclusively by New England SkyPix. New England SkyPix has provided imagery for both commercial and residential real estate, documented construction projects such as Polar Park, and various buildings in the Worcester and Boston area. New England SkyPix creates content and produces complete commercials and provides aerial footage for the film industry and video podcasts. New England SkyPix is fully insured and licensed for commercial work by the FAA. Call or text 774-452-4488 or visit newenglandskypix.com for residential or commercial inquiries. Be sure to follow New England SkyPix on Facebook and Instagram, and subscribe to New England SkyPix's YouTube page for some behind-the-scenes imagery of the making of Unsolved Worcester. You don't want to miss it. Looking for great ways to spend your weekend in Worcester? Want to know where to find the cheapest gas in the city? Want live traffic updates and where roadwork is taking place? For these and all things Worcester, visit thisweekinworcester.com. Before you leave the house each day, be sure to visit thisweekinworcester.com for the popular 5 Things You Need to Know Today in Worcester to stay in the know on everything happening in Worcester, day after day, week after week. And follow TWIW on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for breaking news, updates, and more. This Week in Worcester. Everything Worcester, every day of the week.
Welcome to Unsolved Worcester. I'm your host, Dan Yeager. In our first episode of Unsolved Worcester, we explore the murders of Elizabeth Matos and William Vega Jr. in early March of 2001. The double homicide was the first in the city in nearly 10 years, and according to FBI data, Elizabeth's and William's murders were 2 of 7 homicides in Worcester that year. Unsolved Worcester will take a deep dive every Tuesday and Thursday into over 70 unsolved homicides and missing persons cases currently under investigation by the Worcester Police Department's Detective Unit. We will be looking to the past to unsolve murders and missing persons cases as far back as the early 1950s and 60s. The approach to Unsolved Worcester is this. Shine a light on each of the cases. Put a life behind each victim's name. Provide a timeline of events and important details. And ask questions that still need to be answered. Our goal is to remind residents of the Worcester area, both past and present, that there are dozens of unsolved homicides and missing persons cases that need resolution. We hope we can be the spark needed to solve a case. It had snowed in Worcester in recent days, and blood from the crime scene was mixing with snow, dirt, and salt on Dewey Street. As dozens of police officers canvassed the neighborhood, frantically searching for anything that might help them solve the case, but almost unbelievably, coming up empty. The lack of evidence around the crime scene is nearly as peculiar as the lack of evidence on the bodies of Vega and Matos. There was no murder weapon at the scene, and police couldn't pin down a motive. According to reports, the teenagers hadn't been robbed. There were no drugs, drug paraphernalia, cell phones, beepers, or weapons on the body to indicate the murders were drug-related. And that's not totally surprising, although Elizabeth was 16 years old and she's still only in the 8th grade at Sullivan Middle School. She and her family had just moved to Worcester from Puerto Rico 4 years prior. Elizabeth was enrolled in an intensive academic support program at Sullivan, including English as a second language classes. An article in the Telegram and Gazette from March 20, 2001 describes Elizabeth as being a non-traditional student, at least 2 years older than the average middle school student. And she was a good student. Elizabeth had made the honor roll in the second quarter that year. After Elizabeth's death, support services were offered to Sullivan Middle School students who wanted to speak with counselors and psychologists. Teachers were also told they could allow discussions of the shootings in their classrooms. Beyond being an older student and having to deal with the difficulties of learning another language, Elizabeth was fighting a battle few of us could even imagine. At age 5, she was diagnosed with leukemia. She had only been given 10 years to live. And while those 10 years had come and gone, months after the murders in July of 2001, Elizabeth's mother, Sonia Lujo, told the Telegram and Gazette that while at dinner just days before her murder, Elizabeth said she may lose her battle with leukemia. Sonia told the Telegram that Elizabeth, quote, never had any problems and was a normal teenager. And friends described Elizabeth as responsible. She had no police record. William, 3 years older than Elizabeth, didn't attend public school in Worcester. He had been enrolled in an alternative school in Methuen. In November 2000, William's parents and his brother Jonathan moved to Worcester from the Bronx. William would follow them to Worcester just 2 months later, moving in with a woman and her 13-year-old daughter in an apartment at 25 Pemberton Street. Vega enjoyed writing rap lyrics, playing basketball, watching movies, and playing computer games. He worked full-time at Honey Farms convenience store at the corner of Charlotte Street and Park Avenue. Like Elizabeth, William also didn't have a record with Worcester Police. He did, however, spend time in the Westboro Juvenile Detention Facility, including at least 3 months with Elizabeth's brother, according to a report. William wouldn't spend more than 2.5 months at the Pemberton Street apartment. On March 14, 2001, the day before William was shot and killed on Dewey Street, he moved in with his family in their new apartment at 57 Chatham Street. After the shooting, William's father, William Vega Sr., was standing near a memorial site on Dewey Street 2 days after his son's murder when he told reporters he had brought William to Worcester to get his son away from the, quote, fast lane life. There are more than a few questions left unanswered. And we asked Worcester Police Department if they could provide some insight on a few things that stand out. The most important where were Elizabeth and William going that night? Even over 21 years later, police couldn't provide us answers we needed to tell the whole story. The investigation remains ongoing, and police won't release case details until the case is closed. So it's up to us to try to piece it all together as best we can to answer that one important question. Where were Elizabeth and William going? While there are a few things we don't know, there is a lot we do know. One important thing we have to remember is, up until the day before they were killed, the lives of Elizabeth and William all but took place within a one-mile radius near Park Avenue and May Street. As we just mentioned, William worked full-time at the Honey Farms at 433 Park Avenue in the corner of Charlotte Street. He worked his usual shift starting at 3 p.m. and getting out after 11 p.m. Elizabeth lived in an apartment with her family at 431 Park Avenue, less than a block away from the Honey Farms William worked at. Elizabeth could see the Honey Farms store's entrance from the corner of her building at Park and West Oberlin Street. West Oberlin Street connects Park Avenue with Dewey Street, just one block away. On the night in question, according to one report, Elizabeth was with a friend when she asked her mom for permission to leave the house. Upon leaving the house, her friend went home and Elizabeth met up with William, who had just gotten off work. Although it was a Thursday night, there was no school the next day as Worcester Public School teachers and staff had a professional development day. It's likely that William met Elizabeth at the West Oberlin and Park Avenue corner, or Elizabeth met William at Honey Farms at the end of his shift. Either way, it's likely the teenagers walked down West Oberlin Street, taking a left on Dewey. William and Elizabeth also could have continued down Park Avenue, taking a right on Main Street and a left onto Dewey Street. If William and Elizabeth had continued walking down Park Avenue, they would have reached the 371 Club, just two blocks away where Sergeant LaPointe was working a detail. Instead, they walked down Dewey Street, a full block running parallel to Park Avenue. It's unlikely they were walking back to William's old apartment on Pemberton Street. He had just moved out the day before, and they walked past Pemberton Street just before they were killed. The apartment was less than half a mile away, just a 6-minute walk from Honey Farms. They could have been walking all the way to William's family's new apartment on Chatham Street, but that was over a mile away, and it was already almost midnight. They would have arrived at William's apartment after midnight, and then Elizabeth would have had to walk all the way back home alone. And then Elizabeth would have had to walk all the way back alone. Wherever they were going, the teenagers never made it. They were gunned down from behind on Dewey Street, between Pemberton and Parker Street, in front of an abandoned auto shop and a boarded up one-story factory building that's still there today. Now, what we haven't discussed up to this point is both Elizabeth's and William's love of dancing. One of Elizabeth's cousins told a reporter how much she loved dancing and that they would go to clubs in Providence to go dancing. William's roommate on Pemberton Street told a reporter a similar story. William loved to go dancing too. And he would frequent the 371 Club on Park Avenue, the same club where Sergeant LaPointe was working a detail before he arrived at the crime scene around the corner on Dewey Street. The 371 Club had a history of being one of Worcester's roughest clubs. On March 17, 2001, just 2 days after William and Elizabeth were killed on Dewey Street, an arrest was made at the 371 Club for assault and battery on a police officer, disturbing the peace and resisting arrest. Could William and Elizabeth have been taking the long way to the 371 Club? Was Elizabeth just walking William there before walking two blocks to home? Had they been there together before? Is someone that was at the club that night responsible for their deaths? We may never know exactly where Elizabeth and William were going that night, but what we do know is neighbors spoke to police after the shooting. One resident, living on Dewey Street, told the Telegram and Gazette she was awakened by the gunshot, and she looked out her window to see William's body lying on top of Elizabeth's. Other witnesses told police they saw a black car in the area after 11 p.m., but before the shooting. A later report about the murders said police believed the killers were traveling in the black car. Requests for information about the vehicle from the Worcester Police Department were denied due to the open investigation. Finally, there's also an unconfirmed report of mistaken identity that Elizabeth wasn't meant to be targeted in the shooting. Instead, another young woman who had worked at the KFC on Park Avenue had planned to meet William and walk home with him. In a story from the Telegram and Gazette in 2006, Elizabeth's mother told a reporter that another woman said she was the intended target of the shooting. Following the autopsy, Elizabeth's body was taken to Puerto Rico, where she was buried on March 23, 2001. A memorial fund was opened in William's name at the First Massachusetts Bank on Park Avenue. The fund was created by one of William's former teachers for young people between the ages of 16 to 20 who are at a crossroads in their life. Thank you for listening. Anyone with information about the murders of Elizabeth Matos and William Vega Jr. are asked to contact the Worcester Police Department Detective Bureau at 508-799-8651 or send an anonymous text message to 274-637. Write TIPWPD plus your message or send an anonymous web-based message at worcesterma.gov/police. Come back next time when we look at a second unsolved double homicide in Worcester from Halloween night 2007. Special thanks to Harvest Design in Northborough, the extensive research provided by Alex London and the Worcester Public Library, the Worcester Police Department, Ron Scott at New England Sky Picks, and our sponsors for making this possible. The Unsolved Worcester podcast music is provided by Tom LeBelzik of the Worcester Jazz Collective. This episode of Unsolved Worcester is written and produced by Pat Sargent. Drone footage provided by New England Sky Picks. Videography and editing by Colin Turner. Victim images are courtesy of the Worcester Police Department. Sponsorship information announcer is Chandler Walsh. Unsolved Worcester website and logo art by Harvest Design. Visit harvest-design.com. Be sure to check out the video for this episode with exclusive aerial views and more on our Unsolved Worcester YouTube page. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button.